Joffsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, reporting to you from deep behind the orange curtain, from our undisclosed location. You know, you know you're in California when, dot, 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 when I'm at my bar and I get excited that they give me a plastic straw. This is really exciting because it's a, you know, it's a wink, wink. As of the first of the year, if you're not aware of this, all those stupid little straws that you get that are made of paper, you know, that's a great idea. Let's make a straw for liquid water soluble. I guess they make them out of all sorts of other materials. Like I heard, what is it? Avocado pits. They grind those up and make straws out of them. And I don't even understand if it's firm enough not to immediately snap or break or decompose. I mean, isn't that, I thought the whole point of this was that it was a seagull choking hazard. So because some seagulls are choking on straws, I have to sip my cocktail now through a paper straw. And yes, by the way, I do use straws in my cocktails. That's the kind of man I am. What? Well, yeah, what? Gotta lean the umbrella against something. I hate it. I absolutely, so yeah, so it, you know, so you're supposed to, the law is you're supposed to basically request, you can request for a straw and you'll get a plastic straw. So know that. I think LA County, though, you freaks in LA, you're totally different. It's no plastic straw for you under any circumstance. You gotta bring your own. So I guess you could get, you know, one of those cigar holders, you know, open it up and have some plastic straw contraband. I'm a big fan of the plastic straw, if you cannot tell. So anyway, that is my report here. I know we got a lot of out-of-state listeners here on the podcast, so I want to make sure that that all of you understand that California comes with great weather and a lot of insane policy. What a week! What a week! All right. You're watching the beginning of the end of the Democratic Party in our era. And honestly, by the way, I don't even think Trump needs a re-election committee. He ought to just have the Congressional Democratic Caucus be his official cheerleading squad for 2020. They, folks, they are doing such a bang-up job at putting Trump back for 4 years. It couldn't be choreographed better if it was Trump himself being the head Puppenmeister. That's puppet master in German. Let's start with this Barr thing. William Barr, Attorney General. What was he? He was sworn in February. So he's pretty new to the job. At the time he was sworn in, not a lot was known about the man. But it was widely whispered that he was the man, the choice to be attorney general. Number of Democrats voted for his confirmation, got him over the top. You know, I had to look this up because I didn't really exactly remember if it was January or February. But sure enough, the guy was confirmed when the Democrats already had the gavel in the House. So the Democrats, you got to follow this, right? The guy that today is Satan incarnate. The guy who the Democrats and their media cohorts are claiming gets his cloven hoof and bifurcated tail polished and powdered at the local Nails Plus establishment. This is the guy that 2 months ago, 3 months ago, they voted to put in. Deep regret, of course, is setting in because comes to find out this guy's really competent. He's a smart lawyer. I'll get to this in a minute. And he's out-lawyering the Democrats. The reason that Barr, the quote-unquote chicken Barr, didn't show up to his hearing yesterday was because he cannot stand the pressure of questioning. Let's get through this. I'll explain all of it. The Democrats want they wanted this Mueller report to be something, right? They wanted this Mueller thing to be the silver bullet that takes down Trump. Now, the Mueller report comes out, and we already, leading up to the Mueller report's release, hear what? Do you remember this? We hear scuttlebutt about how, you know, there really isn't much there. Now, I'll tell you where that scuttlebutt was coming from. It wasn't coming from the Trump camp. It was coming from the Mueller camp, because what they were doing, it already pre-qualifying, right, the tone and conclusion of the report in an effort to severely play down expectations. If the expectations going into the report release, what was that, a month and a half ago? If the expectations going into the release was indictment, impeachment, the end of Trump, and all we got was Trump dropping some F-bombs and no conclusions of any sort of, legal jeopardy, that would have been a big solid thump and a dud. So they began coming out saying, really, there's not a lot there. Don't expect anything. And then the report comes out and we have pages and pages and pages of 400 pages. It's two volumes dealing with the obstruction and also with a collusion, right? Allegations. And it's 400 pages of nada. It's 400 pages of Mueller's team in a vainglorious way describing the extraordinary efforts, their extraordinary methods, their sheer brilliance, their incredible devotion to the rule of law, blah, 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 blah. And in the end, nothing. So what do the Democrats have now? Now they've got this Barr guy, the guy they put in, right? He's the attorney general. He's in charge of the Justice Department. And if we must get constitutional, reports to whom? The president of the United States. Now, this isn't Trump's design. Trump did not write the Constitution. What? He didn't ratify it either. He's just a guy y'all want to play by the rules, right? I've heard that all week. Trump should play. This is a constitutional republic. What the hell? Who does Trump think he is? Okay, I'll tell you who he thinks he is. In Article 3, it deals with his powers as president. And he controls the Justice Department. He's the one who suggests and brings to a confirmation vote the attorney general. The attorney general is the head law enforcement officer. And ultimately, he decides what goes on. And in all of this, Barr ends up releasing the report, redacting only the things that by law must remain out of public view, i.e. grand jury testimony. If the Democrats really wanted this unredacted report to be loose as a goose out there, all they need to do, because they're the guys in charge of federal legislature, right? I mean, they can write a bill. Change Rule 6E. Change the rule that says you can't release grand jury testimony. Make an exception. Create a little, subparagraph that says, well, all of this is still true, but members of Congress are allowed to view this. They don't want that. They want a circus. They can't impeach Trump. They know they don't have anything. Trust me, if they had anything, if they had a leg to stand on, we'd be having impeachment proceedings right now. Instead, they want to create fake impeachment proceedings and bring Barr in. And what they wanted to do, right, Jerry Nadler, not his exact name, but anyway, Nadler wanted Barr to come in and be questioned by lawyers brought in by the committee. This is the House Judiciary Committee. This is the committee that oversees the judiciary, judges, i.e. lawyers. Nads is a lawyer himself. But he apparently doesn't think very highly of his own skills because he needs his own lawyers there to question the attorney general. Do you understand how absurd this is? And even in an impeachment proceeding, do you know who the lawyers are that are questioning witnesses in the trial? They're members of Congress. The Democrats are so stupid and inept and bozo-like. that they admitted freely for all of us. Even if you look, if you might like Democrat, whatever, you're a Democrat, your people are letting you down. You elected some real numbnuts to the Hill. And your zest to show Trump some comeuppance. And I mean, I'm speaking now to all my good friends here in Orange County, many of whom have a long history of voting Republican and decided this election. Yeah, we're really going to show Trump. We're really going to show him. I'm going to elect this no-name rubber stamp for Nancy Pelosi to be my congressman, congresswoman, or Congress fatty. Now, in all these instances, right? What? Now, yeah, listen to last week's show. If you don't get the reference, they sent these nincompoops up there. They're all voting for this, and now it put this you know what? If I was a Democrat, I would want Nads. I'd want Jerry Nadler to remain as obscure as possible. 100%. But no, instead he's in charge and he's making a fool of himself. And bar all of this talk about him lying and perjuring himself, I read the transcripts. I'm telling you, the questions that were asked were so vague and he answers them vaguely. If you want to catch, here's a trick. If you are a accomplished attorney, you have to ask very specific questions designed to merit simple responses. I think the best way I can explain this is you want to elicit a yes or no response. If you don't get a yes or no response, you push your target, your interviewee, into an answer that is a yes or a no, with no modification, no caveat, nothing like that. But they didn't do that with Barr. So the whole thing with he lied to Congress. You know what that was all about? That was when they asked him, did anyone possibly have any problems with the conclusions that you made? Well, it comes out that Mueller writes Barr a long letter and he's grousing about the tone and the characterization and the narrative. He's like, you didn't put context in with my decision. But they weren't asking him about context when he was testifying on the Hill. They were asking about conclusions. I know this is probably lost on all these dumb Democrats, but those are two different words. Two completely different words. And context, it doesn't matter, hell of beans. If I'm trying a case, at the end I win it, and the judge says, you know, verdict for the plaintiff. And I say, excuse me, Your Honor. That's a great verdict. That is exactly what my client and I, that's what we wanted. But Your Honor, please, I would like you to add some context to that verdict. Can you please, for the record, state how wonderful my closing statement was? And you know that witness on the third day, you know, I really, really sliced and diced her, didn't I? Whoa, yeah. I mean, what a lying beezy. Can you put that in the record, please? Because I want everyone to understand the context of my hard work these past 2 weeks. Yeah, I get laughed out of the courtroom. Who was that? What? I mean, don't get me wrong. There are plenty of lawyers. I actually don't know of any lawyer that's asked that, but I know lawyers want that because lawyers are conceited. You know what? And Mueller is no different, and everyone on his team is no different, and they are conceited, full of themselves, and absolutely depressed that they found nothing. The pressure of the entire political establishment, Republican and Democrat, along with the entire left wing of America, was invested emotionally, financially, and politically in Mueller finding something. I cannot overstate enough how depressed Mueller and especially Mueller's team has to be. And instead, what's the result here? The result is now the investigation is turning. And the fire that was directed at Trump is now going to be directed at all of these bozos. And I've been watching watching Barr testify, and he is good. He is smart. He reminds me of the gold standard. John Roberts, when he was in the Bush administration when he was put up for confirmation. And the Democrats, boy, did they grill him. Oh, my gosh. They grill Biden, Joseph R., wannabe president, and favorite elderly son of the Democratic Party. Wait, he remember when he was questioning Biden? When Biden was questioning Roberts? Oh, my God. Finally, he got so frustrated. He goes, man, you're good. I got to tell you. And he did that one of those, you know, those crap-eating grins. You're good. That's all he could say. Biden's a lawyer. And that's the fact here. Most of these Democrats, and even a lot of the Republicans, yeah, they're lawyers. They go to Washington. They're really terrible lawyers. They're idiots. But more so on the Democratic side, because look, I mean, what Trey Gowdy, right? No idiot. That guy was a top-notch prosecutor. And Lindsey Graham, I'll show you what I mean by this. Because Lindsey went there. He just did a takedown of Hawaii's senator like none other. All right, there's more to talk about. I'll give you the example of the takedown. I think that's a good one. And of course, yeah, I'll get more into this Barr thing. You've got to understand, everything you're hearing right now is a lie, and it sets Trump up for success because they can't let it go, right? They can't let it go. Meanwhile, the economy's gangbusters. Everything's going great. And it's all just a total setup. I'll explain. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
That's another one of these political miscalculations. And I tell you, it's a miscalculation the same way people do this in litigation all the time. We attorneys see it. I call it the boomerang effect. If you're going to lob a bomb at somebody, be mindful that it's not a flipping boomerang, that it doesn't come back and hit you in the face. And that's what's going on with this vitriol and, I don't know, just demagoguery about this being Watergate. Because Trump turned it around immediately and on them and said the spy scandal on his campaign and on his transition team, orchestrated by the Obama White House with all of their stooges from Jim Comey, Clapper, Brennan on down, that's bigger than Watergate. And that's what I'm saying. It's this example of Democrats just blowing their wad too soon, too hard, and then they got nothing. And in the end, it's just a fire that's lit in their face. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on Friday, the 3rd of May. It is May. Yes, I don't know where this year is going at all. We're going to be in the middle of the year before we know it. And I still haven't recovered fully from 2018, so I don't know how this is going to go for me. All right. So Barr first testifies to the Judiciary Committee in the Senate and then is scheduled to testify for the Judiciary Committee in the House. The House wanted to set it up so he doesn't show. So what they did is they created a list of rules and requirements and ways to do the thing that made it impossible for the attorney general to show up. One of them was that they had these outside attorneys asking questions that really are the duty of the members of the committee to ask. So anyway, Barr did testify and extremely competently a couple days ago, and the Democrats had nothing, so it resorted to, the senior Democrat, the senior senator from Hawaii, Kamikaze Hirono. No, it's Mazie Hirono. But Kamikaze Hirono went in there and said this.
We've already acknowledged that you think it was not a crime. I'm just asking whether you think it's okay. Even if it's not a crime, do you think it's okay for the president to ask his White House counsel to lie?
Which
look,
event?
If you're just going to go back to whether
which
or not
event
it's a crime,
are you
you're telling
about?
Me that
which
it's okay. Let me ask you the last question that I have in 17 seconds. Do you think it's okay for a president to offer pardons to people who don't testify against him, to threaten the family of someone who does? Is that okay?
When did he offer a pardon to someone?
I think you know what I'm talking about. Please.
You know, I think the way that they send senators from Hawaii to Washington, the way they select them is they must go to like a homeless camp somewhere and just randomly pick somebody. This is a senior member of government. No, I understand she's trying to be a demagogue and she's trying to speak over him, but it's not done well. There's nothing artful here, or clever. She's reading, you should see her too, she's reading from a giant, like, note card. You know, Senator Hirono, my kids do a better job in the kindergarten play that my daughter just did. Look, and she actually memorizes her lines, you stupid person. I don't, anyway, whatever. So, Lindsey Graham, this is great. Lindsey Graham, and remind you, now he is, because the Republicans are in charge in the Senate, right? They've got the Senate. So, the Republicans are the chairman and women of the respective committees. And Lindsey Graham, accomplished former prosecutor, longtime senator, he says this.
What do you mean?
Please, wait. Mr. Attorney General, you know, give us some credit for knowing what the hell is going on around here with you.
Not really. Woo. To this line of questioning.
So,
listen, you've slandered this man.
Yeah, what I sort of want to know is how do we get to this point? Yeah.
I do not think that I'm slandering anyone.
All I can say,
Mr. Chairman, I am done. Thank you very
much. You slandered this man from top to bottom. So if you want more of this, you're not going to get it. If you want to ask him questions, you can't.
Oh, that's right. You got spammed. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, making radio great again. Yes, so the Congressman Cohen, Democrat Tennessee, a.k.a. Chicken Bucket Steve. No, I don't know. What do they call him? All I know is he decided to bring a bucket of KFC, I guess to drive home the point that Barr was a no-show and that had chickened out on attending. He also, for good measure, brought a rubber chicken, which my friends in West Hollywood tell me it can be used for other things. This is bad optics. You know, Jimmy Kimmel last night, did you hear this? He goes, look, the Democrats keep doing things like this. They're going to get Trump reelected. You, what was it, a week ago, right after we did our show, Bill Maher had Adam Schiff on his show. He just told him point blank, it looks, there is nothing there to the Mueller report. Guys, you look like, now you just look like you're stalking Trump. And surprisingly, Schiff stared blankly and had no visible emotional response. This is the political context to all of it, right? Barr is in no legal jeopardy. Should he have shown up and let them eviscerate? Maybe it would have been a better move. But at the end of the day, it's almost better that they brought the chicken. Now all we have are pictures of a Democratic congressman eating chicken at a committee hearing. And that's the story. With his lips still greasy from the fried bird, Representative Steve King, Democrat Ohio, had this to say. Cohen.
Chicken Barr should have shown up today and answered questions. He was afraid of Barry Burke. He was afraid of Norm Eisen. An attorney general who was picked for his legal acumen and his abilities would not be fearful of any other attorneys questioning him for 30 minutes. This man was picked to be Roy Cohn and to be Donald Trump's fixer. The Black Sox look clean compared to this team. It's a sad day in America.
He actually had bits of fried breaded material on the side of this. This guy's, this is so gross. And by the way, enduring image of the 2016 election was Trump eating a giant bucket of KFC on board his magnificent private jet. I think it was one of the images that, ended up winning him the presidency. The dichotomy, right? Trump the optimist on his jet, enjoying a, what we might call a blue-collar billionaire lifestyle, right, that he's built for himself. And this is a guy in the government payroll sitting there, and I don't know, it's just so bizarre. It's so bizarre. And they think it's going to be. And by the way, what he's talking about here, these are the two lawyers that the House Judiciary Committee wanted to use to question Trump. And again, I just remind you, these are, for the most part, these are all attorneys that sit on the Judiciary Committee and are essentially acknowledging to you and I, the American public, that they are not themselves qualified enough to question the Attorney General, over whom they have obvious oversight, right? It's so bizarre to me. So this, all this talk, right, that Barr is nothing more than Donald Trump's fixer, that he's Donald Trump's personal attorney, Donald Trump's defense attorney. We've heard all this used this week. Just let me remind you of this on Tom Joyner, from Tom Joyner's morning show on April 4th, 2013. Blast from the past, I give you former Attorney General Eric Holder.
Are you going to stay around for all 4 years?
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Come on, man.
We need you.
Mr. Attorney General, please.
I'm happy. I'm still enjoying what I'm doing. There's still work to be done. I'm still a president's wingman, so I'm there with my boy.
I'm here with my boy, Sam Rogowski, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I promised in the first segment I would come back to this, and I do not break my promises. Sam Rogowski here, your host, your valiant truth teller in these dark, troubled times. I said the Democrats were hoist by their own petard when they when they went along with groupthink that Bill Barr was a safe attorney general. He was not the other guy. I forget who was that guy with the shaved head that was going to be. He was number three in the Justice Department or whatever he was. The name escapes me right now, but he was a big man with a shaved head. He looked intimidating, and he was a Trumpist. I submit to you that name that was floated early on before Bill Barr's name emerged was nothing more than a ruse. It was a ruse. That's exactly the kind of man they didn't want to have be the attorney general, a loyal Trump stooge. No way. But Bill Barr was involved in this Mueller report way back when, all the way back in May and June of 2018. And this issue came up during his confirmation hearings because he submitted a memorandum, which is also called a memo, for those of you from Cucamonga, on June the 8th. And this memo was then when he was in private practice. He was working for a big shishi law firm. And he wrote this, I think, 18 pages or whatever it is, a long memo. And the title of the memo, it's regarding, and I quote, Mueller's obstruction theory. Now, this memo, I could get into all the boring legal mumbo jumbo, but it is the most brilliant takedown of Mueller's obstruction case. How many months is this before? 6, 7, doing some quick math here. 7 plus 4, 11. 7 plus 4. Is that right? About 11 months, give or take, before the Mueller report was released. And he sent this to none other than Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. You know who he is, right? He's the guy who became the de facto Attorney General overseeing all of this when Mr. Sessions, the seminal wimp, recused himself. And the thing about this memo, so I can tell you a little more about the memo. The memo is not important itself, but it shows that the Trump legal team already had an in with Barr going way back when. And the critical issue was a particular section of federal law pertaining to obstruction. And if it applies to this case, because they knew that Trump hadn't destroyed evidence. They knew he hadn't suborned perjury. They knew he hadn't done any of the things that, for example, Clinton and Nixon were accused of doing. No. Well, Clinton was actually convicted of it, right, in the House, right? Just not impeached. So nonetheless, it wasn't any of the classic obstruction elements. It rather had to do with this new novel theory that by telling Comey to go easy on Flynn, that was a specific instance, that he was obstructing an investigation. The problem with this, right, and the Democrats keep talking about, you know, they keep talking about the Constitution. So I hate to come back or keep coming back to this pesky document. But the Constitution installs in the executive branch plenary powers. That's a big fancy word to say all powers in the executive branch over the judiciary, and specifically over the Justice Department. The president, in effect, is the boss of the Attorney General. The FBI director then reports as underneath him or her, right? So in this case, it was Trump. Then comes the Attorney General, then comes the FBI Director. And if you start creating carve-outs to the president exercising his constitutional authority as the executive of the United States through some, I don't know, some kind of wobbly concepts of recusal, right, which is what Sessions did, was so dumb. Recusing himself. You essentially, any person could come along, any lawmaker from the opposition party, for example, could point to something that the president does and for political reasons call it obstruction and hamstring, really basically get the entire executive branch to cease functioning. And in 19 pages, this is exactly what Bill Barr did, but they knew. See, they already knew his position on all of this. And so I'm telling you, the Trump people are not nearly as stupid, and Trump himself is not nearly as, what's the word, unable to listen to advice as he's made out to be in the media. Putting Bill Barr, knowing exactly what his theory was on obstruction, where he stood on it. And by the way, reading it, it's all founded in law. It's all founded. It's a well laid out, annotated and backed up by evidence, legal argument. Knowing where he stood and knowing that was really the only area where, you know, Trump had some vulnerability, depending on how broadly they were to expand the obstruction statute. That was it. It was a setup. The Democrats fell for it. Now, there's an article today in Politico that says some moderate Democrats what is this? I got to get the exact heading. I lost it. Well, the moderate Democrats are expressing some regret over voting for Bill Barr. and his confirmation. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Understand this, though. They're not going to get around it. And what Mueller was trying to do, what Mueller was effectively trying to do here, was make obstruction so broad that any future president could be totally derailed in his function as the chief executive who is responsible for the Justice Department anytime any member of the opposition came along and cried foul. And that's not what our founding fathers intended. It's not what's good for this country. It's certainly not an ideal situation. And it would have, of course, been weaponized against the Democrats sooner or later when the roles were reversed. All right. Yes, yes, I'm getting, I know there's things happening in the race. We've got more people on the Democratic side. I'll get to all of it. I'll get to all of it. And Venezuela, my goodness, things are a-popping over there. Ilhan Omar in the news. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, he.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, you know, I want to take just a second, my good friends and neighbors lost their dog this week, and it's you know, those of us who have animals and pets in our lives know how hard this is. I wanted to take another minute for all of you out there that don't have animals. I used to be one of you. This is just a life pro tip, because I think I could have used this advice. And whenever I look back at a previous version of myself where I maybe didn't do things exactly the right way, I always want to travel back in time and tell that version of me a thing or two. And so it's in this spirit that I'm going to share the following. I remember when we lost our Lucy. And there, you know, there are just some people who did not understand my grief. Now, for me, it was, I'm just going to tell you candidly, it was, and if you listen to the show and were following our program back then, you heard me talk about it. It was like losing a child. And by the way, I'm not a childless person. I have three kids. It was like losing one of my four children. My dog was one of the kids. I can't tell you the number of times where I did not understand people in their time of grief and losing pets. And I remember even vividly in several instances. And if any of you that I did this to are listening, I'm embarrassed and I apologize, because I remember in instances thinking, well, what is this crazy person doing crying over a dog? It's just a dog. I mean, wasn't that just the same dog that took a dump in the living room like 2 weeks ago? I mean, yeah, no more dumps in the living room. You're in good shape. I mean, I thought that way. And I will tell you that in some respects, for all of you who don't have pets, the relationship that you have with the pet is way better than some of the relationships you have with human beings that you love and adore and that you would miss tremendously if they were to depart. So it's a real thing, and my heart goes out to Ron and Nancy, and I feel for you, and I know what you're dealing with, and it's just a tough thing. And to all of you who have friends and family, even if you don't get the animal thing, if a pet dies, just know, just put in your heads, their child died. What would you do? And behave accordingly. And if it's not full of compassion, then you got to fix yourself as a human being, because there's something really profoundly wrong with you. Sam Rejofsky back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. The South, the glorious South. Who among you has had the pleasure to live in the South? I have. Robbie, producer Robbie, lived in the South. You were once upon a time, Robbie, a Georgia peach, if I recall this correctly. I lived in North Carolina, in Durham, across the street from Duke University. I was a wee young lad, so I don't remember a lot of it. I have some vivid memories, though, of my babysitter's car. I was a car guy from the very beginning, so to me, my earliest memories are of cars. And she had a Volkswagen van. I thought it was just incredible. And so I remember the inside of her van. And then a little bit from Duke University, which is a beautiful campus if you haven't been. But the South, well, they've got some strange people in the South. For example, Steve Cohen, right? That Democrat from Tennessee who was chomping on fried chicken when he was, questioning a rubber chicken. So we got that guy. Now, a Georgia representative. Oh, Alabama. Sorry. I apologize to everybody in Georgia. Alabama. Representative John Rogers. Now, this guy's a congressman, right? He's a congressman. So this isn't, you know, the county dog catcher. This is not the, I don't know, what a state senator or a state assembly person or anything like that. He's not on a city council. This guy goes to Washington, D.C., and he gets asked something about abortion, gets questioned about Donald Trump Jr. and his tweet basically decrying abortion. And Representative John Rogers says this in response to Trump Jr.'s abortion remarks.
Him being born, that's proof right there. That's a very, very good defense I have for abortion right to him. Look at him and say, why don't you have aborted him when he was born? He would have made that stupid statement, right? So that's the first proof I got. That mother of hell right to have abortion I had. They made a decision to have him, didn't they? They could have aborted him, but they made a decision to keep him. Because he's evidently retarded, crazy. Donald Trump's son, I know there's something wrong with that boy. He said, hey, that's the best defense I got for abortion right there, looking at him.
That's, my friends, the best defense for abortion. You know, I gotta read this. Cause maybe in the bits and pieces of fried chicken there was something lost in translation. Him being born, that's proof right there. That's a very, very good defense I have for abortion. Look at him and say, and I say, his mother should have aborted him when he was born. And he wouldn't have made that stupid statement, right? So that's the first proof I got that mother ought to have an abortion. They made it seem, I don't know how to read this. This is in English. But anyway, they made it seem to have him. They made seem to have him, didn't he? They could have aborted him. Oh, man. Because he's evidently retarded. Crazy. Donald Trump's son. I know there's something wrong with that boy. this is good. I actually think this is good thought formation because you start with your thesis and then you end with the same thought as a conclusion. That's the best defense I got for abortion, looking at him. Yeah, I don't know. Producer Robert, I do not know if they have debates in the Alabama elections, but if this guy came out as the winner, God only knows what his opponent, what his opponent had to say. You know, Okay, I know. It's one guy. But I am telling you, every week, every day, and virtually every hour, Trump is getting these people to self-destruct. Yo, what did we talk about last hour about all this Barr coverage? And they're, you know, the late night hosts were saying, look, enough with eating fried chicken in a committee room in session. Like, enough of rubber chickens, enough of these stunts, enough of this obstruction when the Mueller report came out as a dud. It's just not good. Even their most extreme liberal media apologists are beginning to turn. I would submit to you that this statement is terrible and disgusting and horrible. This guy's a clown, obviously. But I would submit to you that a critical symptom of Trump derangement syndrome is deafness. I mean, these people are deaf. They are not listening to any feedback that they're getting. And they're getting feedback, friends. Trust me on this. They're getting feedback. There is a poll out just the other day about how many Americans think felons ought to vote. Remember, this is a cornerstone topic. It got the most attention, right, because of its absurdity. And we talked about this a little bit last week, but the absurdity, right, of felons being allowed to vote from prison. Yes, that's a great idea. And I think something like 76% of Americans think it's a bad idea. Well, no crap. Do we really need to have a poll for that? But nonetheless, there's the math. And they're still talking about it. And I'll give you an illustration here of how Trump factors into this and the Trump derangement syndrome factors into it. Trump will send out a tweet saying the crazy Bernie thinks felons ought to vote. This is a bad idea, blah, blah, blah. And it prolongs the debate and prolongs the Democrats' continued effort to talk about it. And it baits them into continuing an issue that they ought to bury and move on and away from. You get a guy like Buttigieg. I think that guy's smart. I think he gets it. I mean, he dropped that as a hot potato, just walked right away from it. He's not taking the bait on fighting Trump. I don't know if you've noticed this, but he's not taking it like Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Joe Biden. To me, that's the winning approach. I would be scared out of my trousers right now if the Democrats all got up in unison. Well, whatever, maybe not unison, maybe Ilhan Omar and AOC and a couple other wingnuts were still banging on about obstruction and collusion. But if the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, most of the candidates that are running for the nomination in 2020, right? If they all got up and said, you know, really, there's not much here. We take issue with the president's policies. Dot, dot, dot. And did that. But they're not. They cannot let all of this go because they're not listening to the words that are coming out of people's mouths, even people that are on their own side. And this is the kind, this is not a collusion, case of collusion. This is delusion. The Democrats are absolutely deluded in thinking that this sells. And they're walking down a path of self-destruction in the process. This is all extreme, right. Right. So they're doing all they think that they can keep this debate alive through 2020. Let's play that out, because I've heard you're not the first person. Yeah, right. Let's play this out. What's today? Well, Sam, it's May the 3rd. OK, what year? Well, yeah, 2019. I gotcha. All right. So when's the election? We're going to have how many months of this? See, to keep a story alive in a 24-hour news cycle, You need to constantly feed it with fuel. And fuel to a story like fire, right? You need air, you need a combustible, you know, whatever. You got it. The same thing needs a story like this needs. So they used Barr this week, right? They used Barr. Barr is the story du jour. He is Trump's stooge. He is a no-show chicken. We think he lied to Congress, and there ought to be an investigation. Okay, not much to it. Was that still going to be a story in 2 weeks? What do they move on to? They are going to, this is the new McCarthyism. They're going, that exact, McCarthy, in his effort to remain relevant, burned through a few legitimate suspects and then began manufacturing criminals out of thin air. You're a communist. And then finally somebody said to him, have you got no decency, sir? And the silence was deafening. And that turning point, of course, led to McCarthy's censure and eventually his political decline. They just are going to run out of boogeymen. They're going to run out. And when they run out, I think it's going to roughly coincide with the time that most Americans are deciding who to vote for. If at that point in time, the economy is as gangbusters as it is right now in the moment, and the latest reports that came out today just, again, reconfirm the fact that the economy is expanding faster than the universe. So we got that bit of headwind for the Democrats. Now, at the same time, if they are just seen as obstructionists, the only votes they get are from the diehard anti-Trump people. And I'm telling you, I promise you this, this is not me living in an echo chamber of my own. There are people out there who are generational Democrats who never voted for a Bush, who never voted for Reagan, thought Reagan was a radical, okay? They're that never, you know, never voted for any Republican. And those people went for Trump, and those people and I got to think about this. I believe in all the instances of people that I know, those turncoats, right? Those converts, those Trump Republicans, but Democrats in all other ways, right? They haven't left Trump. Now, they're not talking to anybody. They're not on anybody's radar. They're not getting called by the pollsters. They're getting ignored by the New York Times and the Washington Post. But those people live and walk among us. And what they like is they like Trump's pragmatic approach to the economy because, believe it or not, they care about that first above all else. And they understand Trump's approach to immigration, which resonates heavily with Americans. We are a law and order country. I've said this ad nauseum. We do not. We're all about legal immigration. But the idea of millions of people unlawfully flooding the border, no bueno. We don't like that. Now, it's not politically correct to say that. So a lot of people being very quiet with the pollsters. They don't, you know, we don't. You can call Trump a racist all the time, and all you're doing is suppressing accurate polling. So nothing, friends, nothing has been learned from 2016. On one hand, the Democrats are still in their same idiotic echo chamber, deaf to the reality around them. And I say deaf because really they're just not hearing good sound advice. I could also say blind, but I don't want to be too cliche. So there's that. And on the other hand, they're still yakking about all this stuff and they're still propagating all this stuff for the most part. All the usual culprits in the New York Times and CNN and et cetera. They're still going on about all this stuff. And all they're doing is taking the people that are quietly for Trump and making them quieter. Trump has still, give or take, according to the official polls, 50-50 right numbers. How many people do you know that are Trump supporters of all your friends? I mean, it's almost, these days, it almost requires a secret handshake, doesn't it? Oh, hello. Well, I have some, you know, Bobby told Susan, and Susan told Jill, and Jill told me that maybe you like Trump. Is that true? And they look like you've just, I mean, it's easier to get into a kiddie porn chat room, I think, than to admit freely somewhere in society that, you know, that you're a Trump guy or gal. So this is another setup for disappointment and disaster for the Democrats and the candidates that they're picking. And as they're falling over to jump on all this Trump stuff and to be for open borders and to be for felons voting and to be for socialism. I mean, the Democrats, my God, you'd think the Democrats were a freaking centipede. They need more feet to shoot. I mean, you have 2 feet, you run out. Anyway, you understand what I'm saying. Sam Rogowski back right after this.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, Sam Nation. Apparently, Dr. Audio in the break here tells me I need to come clean about what happened in the babysitter's van in Durham, North Carolina. You know, it's a terrible world that we live in. I can't even admire a woman's van anymore without creating some confusion about what I might or might not be alluding to. No, I've been a car guy from the very, very beginning. And it's funny because my parents were set to remodel their home. Kind of their American dream, right? This is a big deal. And they're excited, but part of this is a purge. And you know this when you move. Moving is great. It's excellent. Everybody should do it once in a while, if for no other reason than to take the opportunity to throw crap out. And my parents brought over a box of things that kind of memories of my childhood. I'm going through it. I even found an unopened report card. And my thoughts on that are I probably should just not open it, right? I mean, I think if it didn't get opened in 88, it doesn't need to be opened now. I think there's an expression about that. I had a thing my mom gave me. I got. I'm pulling this out here. Hold on a second. I guess this was maybe when I was 12, and it was a project on the American dream. And so I wrote my American dream. And you'll see where I'm going with the whole van story, you sickos in there. I'll tell you where I'm going with this. My American dream is to preserve my personal freedom. This is what I'm writing here. I'm pretty impressed of this. This is 12-year-old Sam. My American dream is to preserve my personal freedom and honesty, to maintain a strong family and good health, and to keep my intellect at full power. Money and perhaps wealth will closely follow. Fortune will not come by itself, but with the help of those five values that I have stated above, it has a good, strong fighting chance. So that's a close quote. Now, we had to put on the folder, on the cover of this folder, an image that would best capture the dream. And, you know, I tell you, the best part about this is this is before the internet. Just want to clarify this, folks. This is before the internet. So there's no Google image search. I had to cut out of magazines a picture. This is how you did it. This is when your parents would suddenly discover there's a page missing out of the National Geographic collection. So I people came in with all sorts of stuff, but for me, this is great. So I come in. I'm going to be a little personal here with you, and please don't take this as braggadocio. Just this is I'm being candid, and I'm being upfront with you as your host. I put a photograph of a helicopter next to a Rolls-Royce sedan, which I believe is a Silver Spirit sedan from the early 90s. And the – well, okay. So this is what's funny. All right, the helicopter – I do not have a helicopter. So, I struck out on that at least at 38. I'm not there. But I literally have the modern version of this car because I – okay, I drive, I have a nice car. I have a Rolls Royce. And it's the same color. Did you know this, Robbie? It's the same. Have I showed this to you? It's the same color and the same exterior and interior as my car. Now, I've forgotten about this. So I have been a car guy from the very beginning and it has nothing to do with the babysitter, okay? You freaks. All right, Sam Rajofsky, I'm back after I set these guys in shape.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rajofsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Rajofsky, Sam Nation, if I were living in Venezuela, my car would have been toast a long time ago. So notice in my American dream, I didn't mention anything about a five-year plan or about collectivization. It's funny how the American dream, at least when I went to school in the 80s and 90s, it was still about the individual. Or maybe, I guess maybe that was my interpretation of it. I don't know. But it is. That's who we are. We're an individualist society who seek improvement of the self. And through that, an elevation of the common good, not the other way around. And this is what's so mystifying about what the Democrats are doing right now is they want to turn it on its head. Bernie, who we know went on his honeymoon to the Soviet Union. Because nothing is more romantic than going with your wife to Moscow. Managing expectations, right? Look, honey, I may not be able to provide for you too great, but look, check this out. This is how bad it could be. So, well, this is, by the way, there are a number of prominent Democrats that are buying into a modified, a sensible capitalism. It's the reverse of Gorbachev. You know, the Gorbachev or Dubček, if we go all the way back to 1968 and communist Czechoslovakia, socialism with a human face. It's just the reverse. These Democrats aren't even being creative. So now we see, of course, what socialism looks like when it really hits the end of the line. We have that in Venezuela this week, of course, horrible imagery showing up of desperate people having enough. And Maduro, communist puppet there, who's only hanging on by a thread because he's got friends in Cuba and in Moscow. Is being propped up, and it looked first that maybe he would be toppled. Now we have some words that perhaps he's going to hang on. Obviously, the end could not come soon enough. This is a terrible, disgusting, horrible regime in a country that was quite wealthy. I have a good friend who served a Mormon mission there. When would that have been? Was it 2000, 2001. Well, the country was fairly well off back then. And of course, it was well off because it had a lot of oil. There was a lot of industry there, tourism. Big oil companies all had refineries there. It was bustling. There were jobs. a marketplace. All of that was undone by Hugo Chavez and his Bolivarian Revolution, okay, which means basically, you know, communism with a South American twist. Ilhan Omar, our Somalian congresswoman, said this about why Venezuela is in crisis.
A lot of the policies that we have put in place has kind of helped lead the devastation in Venezuela. And we've sort of set the stage for where we are arriving today. This particular bullying and the use of sanctions to eventually intervene and make regime change really does not help the people of countries like Venezuela, and it certainly does not help, and it's not in the interest of the United States.
I don't even know if she knows what she's saying. Venezuela is broke because all of the wealth was stolen from the private sector, concentrated in the hands of a central state that then squandered it on its own goodies. And this is evidenced by that case that just came out of Florida and federal prosecutors charging a number of people for a huge amount, billions of dollars of money laundering. And these are high-ranking Venezuelan apparatchiks who were all storing their wealth in the United States through various sham businesses. This is what happens, you idiotic Democrats, you idiotic leftists. You are so dumb, you let history repeat itself over and over again. This is the playbook of your gods and heroes. They tell you it's for the collective good. They take it all away, including the little you have. And then they go run to Switzerland. They run to the United States with it. Well, I don't know. Will they run it when it's the United States that's stealing all of it? Well, but they'll find someplace. They take it all. They live a lavish lifestyle. They have their, oh, don't worry, Medicare for all. Yeah, that's right, Medicare for all. Just not for you, Bernie, right? Because when you're president, you're going to have a White House doctor and a White House medical team, and you and your family aren't going to be operated on in the veterinary chop shops that the rest of us are going to be going to. Do not be fooled, friends. I have seen this with my own eyes. My family has experienced this. It is bull crap. It's seductive, especially for dumb people. All right, Sam Rachofsky, I will be back after I calm down.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Ilhan Omar, of course, let me tell you, you know, you're going to hear a lot about this lady. Yeah, she's a Somalian immigrant. We talked about her a little bit last week on the program. She's a Somalian immigrant, came to this country with, you know, we took her in with open arms. And this is the part that really rankles me, right? Because, you know, my parents are immigrants. They come to this country and my parents have strong political opinions. You might be surprised by this, that I was raised in a household where there were strong political opinions. But we never crapped on this country. This is among all of our immigrant friends from Eastern Europe, I'll tell you this. No, we do not sit around and say, ugh, America, ugh. In fact, we as immigrants, I think for the most part, we look down on that. We frown on that big time. And I want you to know, just as the son of immigrants, I loathe people who come to this country, who are taken in, who rise to the top with all the opportunities afforded to them by the great country that we are, to then talk down to America. You can, and this is the difference, Ilhan Omar, by saying, you know, we caused Venezuela, we did this, America, American policies. It's not just the intellectual substance of what she's saying, but I really am distressed and disgusted by the target of her accusation. Why don't you just say, I didn't like what the Bush administration did? Do you see the difference? Previous administrations, you know, we can have a political debate and we can call our president, you know, well, God, we've called him everything possible. So I don't know what else there's left to call him. You can call him anything you want. And that's, you know, I'm not one of these, you know, well, that's show some respect to the presidency kind of people. I think a healthy political discourse. Now, of course, we can burn the flag. And we're allowed to do that because this country's great and we have our freedoms. And we are allowed to say these things about America because, again, we're a great country and we have the freedom to say it. But just because you're free to say something doesn't mean you ought to. Right? And Ilhan Omar cannot get out of her own way. So she's a Muslim woman, Somali immigrant, comes to this country and rises to become a member of Congress. Speaking of American dreams, that, I don't know, that's probably as great as it gets. My thinking is, if you ended up running for Congress, maybe you shouldn't hate the country that that you're representing. She had this lovely thing to say Tuesday from a rally outside the front lawn of the U.S. Capitol. Listen to her.
The occupant of the White House and his allies are doing everything that they can to distance themselves and misinform the public from the monsters that they created that is terrorizing the Jewish community and the Muslim community. This is not going to be the country of the xenophobics. This is not going to be the country of white people. This is not going to be the country of the few. This is the country of the many.
Oh, you know, I know a little bit about English. If you're saying it's not going to be the country of xenophobics, what you're saying is this is a country of xenophobics today, currently, in its present state. It's not going to be a country of white. Oh, okay. All right. Whitey, you're out. Robbie, you and I are toast. Dr. Audio, you too. I don't, you know, it's not our country anymore. So, even if you think that we have a diversity problem and even if you think that we are, you know, perhaps a little bit close-minded in our view of outsiders. The policy is one thing, and disagreements over policy is one thing. But getting into slandering the country, and especially when, you know, I'm a big believer in gratitude. You know, we as a country, Ilhan, Madam Omar, we took you in and saved your money from getting whooped over there in your S-hole of a country. You had to flee to Kenya because your own S-hole country, as Trump put it correctly, by the way, was literally falling apart while our brave men and women of the military came in and sacrificed, in many cases, their lives to provide food to members of your community that you left behind to protect yourself. You are a disgusting person. And the Democrats ought to be fleeing away from this nasty, nasty woman as fast as they can. And so I'm telling you, if I was running for Congress, let's say, and I was a Republican, you don't even have to run against your opponent. You just have to say your opponent is in a party with this other lady. And this other, this is what she says, and this is what she thinks. And you want to vote for that party? You want these guys in charge of Congress? All right. Yeah, you go. Yeah. Do that. It's a disaster. Literally, Ilhan Omar is a disaster for the Democrats. Trump will use her. Other Republicans that are running will use her. It is not good for the Democrats in 2020. And rightly so. Sam Rzhovsky, one way it's running by so fast. God, just one quick segment, a couple more thoughts. Yes, and then we'll start our weekend. I'm looking forward to this.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, he.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Murjowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Murjowski, there's some news yesterday, today, about Facebook blacklisting people. There's a term I think you'll hear a little bit more of. It's called getting unpersoned. Now, I guess that's what happens when you are banned as a person from a social media platform. And you sort of, your existence, you cease to exist in your digital form on that platform. And it's sort of like, I would say sort of like the Democrats' perception of abortion. It's all very consistent, you see. I mean, they're clearly, you heard it from Mr. Alabama, right? You know, Donald Trump Jr. should have been aborted by his mother, and kind of implies maybe it might not be too late to abort him now. So this is what's happened. They've number of people, Milo Yiannopoulos, if you remember him, Alex Jones, gone. You know, Paul Joseph Watson got X'd. And he's an English guy, radio host, YouTube personality, writer, a little bit of a conspiracy theorist. I don't know necessarily, but he's a libertarian guy. No? Kind of? But, you know, I've looked at his stuff. Facebook's come in and they said they basically have removed all dangerous content. Good thing, though. Good thing, friends, that as of this morning, they still had links up for Hamas and for the Muslim Brotherhood. So the Muzz Bros, they're great. We keep those guys. Hamas, I looked again after a couple hours and then Hamas was off. But other links to other pro-Palestine, Hamas-linked organizations were up. I'm back to my soapbox about private companies on this, guys. Facebook's a private company. But you all on the left need to be very careful about forcing a small-time baker to bake a cake for a gay wedding when they don't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding. That's as simple as that. I'm referring to the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, the versus the Colorado, what was it, Civil Rights Commission? Yeah. And a very narrow 7-2 ruling on that case, not going to rehash all of that. But basically, Facebook is like any other business, open to the public. And what's going to happen is this, and I'm pulling out my Sam Nation crystal ball. It's dropping out of the sky. Can you see the halo light, the laser, you know, focus beam on it? Here it comes. Get my hands warm. Here's the future that I see. Democrats, liberals, civil rights activists have been forcing over the past many decades conservatives to open their quote-unquote open to the public establishments like their mom-and-pop bake shops and everything and accommodate every loony left-wing thing and person and whatnot. And it's been under the guise of civil liberties, under the guise of fairness, under the guise of equality, and fine, okay. We don't disagree. Now, free speech, you can't cry, yell fire in a crowded room because it causes panic. You can't incite terroristic acts. I get all of that. But if you're banning somebody for being, quote unquote, dangerous just because of their political opinions, there is a number of states right now. D.C. actually is a district. I don't know if you know this, but you can't discriminate against somebody on the basis of their political affiliation. That's actually, it's funny, of all places, D.C. Yeah, I get that, because one restaurant in D.C. can't say, well, we're not going to let any Democrats in. I'd want to eat there. Actually, it's called the Trump Hotel. You just go to the Trump Hotel. You can wear a Trump hat. MAGA hat. You can hang out with cool people and speak your mind. But what's going to happen, and this is where my crystal ball comes in, is the Democrats have weaponized, right, civil rights into forcing accommodation of opposing opinion and of persons that are not and ideologies that are hostile to conservatives. And the conservatives are going to see your bluff, folks. They're going to just do the same thing in reverse. And they will legislate it. They will make Facebook not do this. And I don't think it's right either way. My gosh, I just think, you know, if it's a private business, if the cake shop doesn't want to bake a gay wedding cake, then let them lose the business. As best as I can tell, you know, a gay family, a couple is just as good to pay as a straight one. And if you don't want to serve, if you want to lose out on a significant portion of income, Godspeed to you. But this is, you know, this kind of thing. Facebook's a private company. They can make the rules. It's their sandbox. It's not the government. Free speech rules do not apply. So that's a dead end argument. But do look for this to be a hot topic, and do look for Republicans down the road to co-opt Democratic positions. I'm not saying the country's going to be better for it, or it's a good thing, but that is something that will eventually, in my view, happen. All right, that's it. It's a wrap. We've gone overtime. We're in the OT. And that we don't get paid time and a half for that, so we're gonna bounce. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your friends and family. Have a relaxing time. And do tell your friends and family about the show. They need us. Have a great one. Take care, guys. Soldiers, keep on moving.